You are listening to Breaking Away, a candid podcast by Chris, developed for the sex-positive community, exploring adult-themed societal norms and how some are breaking away from them. Please know this podcast will contain adult themes and adult language. If you're okay with this, stay tuned for this week's episode.
And we're on.
Hello.
Good morning.
How are you doing, Hugo?
Doing all right. Yeah, still got a little bit of a cough, but hopefully I can get through this and we can recapture the magic of our first recording.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I hope so as well. So thank you for joining me again on Breaking Away. Our first recording didn't work so well because I was learning about technology and was not aware of the mute feature.
That happens.
So we're trying to recapture what we chatted about on our first recording of this. So it can only get better, right?
I would hopefully, sir. Now I'm messing up. I would hope so. Yes.
Now I put the pressure on, right?
I think so.
So basically, let's kind of delve right into this. When you hear the word sex positive, what does that mean?
Well, I think that for the most part, it's a person that is open to, so somebody who is open and understand that sex and the people that express themselves in sex, that it is a very open and wide field, that there's a lot of fluidity in things. And somebody who is sex positive tries not to legislate, tries not to pass judgment onto other people that are consensually trying to express themselves through sexuality. And so, you know, for me, as I study and as I look at and as I appreciate what others post online or what they blog about or what they put on YouTube or whatever ways they want to express them sexually, for me, it's about appreciating what they do without having my own agenda, without having my own, you know, without passing too much of a judgment, because we all do, but letting them be as long as everybody's being consensual.
Absolutely. And consent is definitely something that we're talking about more and more right now in this discussion. You have a really, like, to me, a very interesting background based on how you were raised. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of explaining a little bit kind of how your parents were, because it's fascinating how you reached this openness in a sex positive world, considering where you came from.
Yeah, I mean, I've given this obviously a lot of thought over the years, and I always get to that question of what's, you know, what, is it nature, is it nurture, and I think that, like, you know, that I end up being a combination of both. So my parents are immigrants. We're originally from Mexico. We came here to the U.S. when I was 10 years old, about 30 years ago. That makes me around 40 now, for those doing the math, and. But my father was born in 1935 during the Depression times, during a very conservative time in Mexico's politics. And he grew up very poor, and he sought out religion as a way of being him being saved, for lack of a better term. My mother, similar, very Catholic. They're 18 years apart. But they both share their faith together, and it was a very conservative faith. And one of the challenges that they had when they moved here to the U.S. is that they did so because of economic factors. Mexico was going through some financial times, and so they came to the U.S. seeking a better life. But they were very worried that American culture was somehow going to erode their morals, and it was going to corrupt their children, my sisters and I. And so we had a lot of battles, especially during my teenage years, about, we want you to remain Mexican, for lack of a better term. Okay. We want you to, you know, to be religious. We want you to be moral. We want you to be ethical. We don't want you to become Americanized. And for me, social or emerging into this culture meant, well, you get to ask questions, you get to find out things. There's more to life than just our simple religion and our simple neighborhood. There's so many ways to live in the world. And so we fought that battle during my teenage years into my early adulthood years, to the point that we broke our relationship. I had to literally move away from them in order for me to gain independence and for me to explore the things that I wanted to explore. Mm-hmm. And so for many years, we just did not talk, and we were at odds. But family is family, and eventually they needed help, and I was in a position to aid them. And so we came back to a grouping, and at that point they realized that, I use common sense in a lot of ways, and although I've gone out to the world and explore, I didn't lose myself in this vilified American culture that they thought existed.
That is, that's a very poignant thing to say. The vilification, right?
Yeah, and I think that we're fighting those things now. I don't know how other immigrant families do it. I think they have similar stories, but I think that it's something that we're fighting now as a culture, that we're having conversations about things that perhaps we didn't talk about before, and it's freaking some people out.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't mind me asking, how did this affect how you approach sex from your, teenage years to, you now have children. So have had sex.
Right. They're not there yet. I think for them, I'll explain it this way. My wife and I, when we decided that we wanted to have children, and it wasn't something that came very easily, we had to go through a long process because we were of different minds about the concept of children. And we can talk about that in a little bit. But once we decided that we were going to have kids, I had a couple of priorities when we negotiated the terms and one of them is that I never wanted to lose her in the process of having kids. And what I mean by that is that I always make her my priority, and I always want to be a priority to her. I realized that, this time of being parents in this capacity is a relatively short window. 18 to 20 years goes by super fast. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with a girl, and I want to be with that girl when this time window's done. And I don't ever want to lose ourselves so much into our kids that their entire life that I forget and I lose track of who she is. And when we're out of this stage, then all of a sudden I realize, I don't know you anymore. And does it still make sense for us to be together? So I've always wanted us, and we discussed this, that let's make each other a priority. That doesn't mean that we can always be, the first person you think about, but I want to be in your thoughts throughout the day. And it's something that that I think you have to exercise as a couple if you're going to make it, because it's very easy to forget with everything that goes on in life that there's, and another person there that cares about you, that loves you, that takes care of you, that feeds you in more ways than one. So that was one thing. Second part was, we want to be conduits of information for our children. I felt that my parents held a lot of things back. So for instance, if I asked my mom or my dad back in the day when I was a teenager, can we talk about sex? Can we talk about AIDS? Can we talk about religion? Can we talk about politics? My parents had a firm belief that there are some subjects that you just do not discuss with people that are under a certain age. And so we just didn't talk about it. I don't think my parents and I never, ever truly had a sex talk in any way, shape, or form. And so what that meant is that I had to go out and seek out the information. And I'm curious, and I'm always all right asking and educating myself on things. And this was in the mid-90s, and we didn't have the internet, but that meant that I went to go look at magazines. I read anything that I could get my hands on. If the guys were passing around something, I would, read up on it. So yeah,
this was podcasts and blogs and all of that. Where do you go?
Well, for instance, back in the day, like there used to be this publication in Los Angeles called the LA Express. And it was basically the, it was adult personals. That's where all the escorts were advertising. That's where back then we had this technology called voicemail, where people would call in and they would get messages back and forth. And that's kind of how people flirted before the internet, and they could do instant messaging. They used this voicemail services. That's where the strip joints advertised. So for me, it was like that. That was a source for one visually appealing photographs, since I couldn't afford a penthouse. But every now and then they had articles about sex, or the LA Weekly was another really good source. They're still around, but they've changed ownership. But the LA Weekly was talking about all sorts of different things going on in LA that were not being covered in the Los Angeles Times, which is a relatively conservative newspaper for Los Angeles. And so between that, National Geographic, when a young man wants to be sexually stimulated, they can find, sources anywhere. It's not really all that hard to try. I can't tell you how many times I paused Aliens because of Sigourney Weaver was in her underwear, and I thought that was very, very cool to look at. So anyways, that's how I was, and to some degree I still am. I'm going to find the answer to a question, and my parents could have either made that easier for me, or they could have made it harder, and they chose the latter. What I decided for myself is that I did not want to make it hard for my kids, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And yeah. So that when they have questions, I want them to come to my wife or I and ask us. And I don't know, it's a matter of having a sex talk, but having an environment where it's a topic that can be discussed, just like we would discuss pretty much anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a continuum. It's not a given date where you sit down and we're going to talk about this. It's setting up an environment within the family where, hey, mom, dad, I have a question, or something happened today. And I want to know more about it. And what does this mean? And that's the environment that my wife and I want to create. I mean, we are getting soon, within the next couple of years, where menstruation is going to become a part of this family from the standpoint of of my daughter. And I would dread that she could not come and talk to me about something.
Mm-hmm.
It would break my heart if all of a sudden I found out that my kiddo had a problem at school, or not a problem, but had a situation happen at school, and she didn't feel that she could reach out to her mother or I on something like that. And I know that that has happened, because nobody talks in some other families, because people don't talk about that. That's a Nikki thing. That's not something that we discuss. It's not polite.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't want that.
That's a very poignant thing to say. Like, it's impolite. It's taboo. It's, you don't talk about these things. They're, not for public consumption. And I think removing that taboo of it is, for me, part of what being sex positive is.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, and that's, and in that sense, like I said, this is not something that came out of whole cloth. I have read what you post about. Some of it is within the realm of what I understand. Some of it I have to stretch my mind, because as I get to be 40 plus, my brain has ossified, and there's some things that I'm sitting in my ways. But I always appreciate the fact that somebody's putting something out there that I can glean some information from. And I think that, without trying to sound like an old fuddy-duddy here, but I appreciate that your generation and the generations that are coming behind you are more outspoken about these things. That you guys are putting it down on paper, where other young people can go out there and look if they're so curious. Because mm-hmm. I don't know that we did that in my time. There weren't blogs back then. Like I said, our sources for information were whatever you can scrounge up, walking around your neighborhood, or maybe get something very clinical at a library, or Playboy penthouse, and if you could get your hands on it.
Absolutely. And just one thing I want to touch on, you had mentioned when we chatted earlier, your dad was raised more in the machismo style of parenting, very macho guy. He had his very specific role. How do you feel Like, have you pushed back in a way? Have you gone the opposite? Like, how do you move forward from that?
Well, in that sense, I guess I'm now grateful to a certain degree of the fact that my dad created a model that I can contrast against. And what I mean by that is that he was so over the top macho that if I ever feel that I am starting to get into that I'm starting to get into his territory, there's some kind of negative magnetism that goes on there that I push back on it. And so when I start feeling like anger is coming up, I start thinking, am I getting into the anger territory that my dad would ever get into? And for instance, he was physically abusive. He was not shy about getting his belt out and beating us kids if he thought we were out of line. He was physically abusive towards my mother. On a couple of occasions, I was able to, so I saw him beat her. There's a reason why my mom doesn't have all her teeth. He hit her offside the head with his pistol once and knocked them all out. And we got to see, my sisters and I got to see all of that. I've written about this. I've talked about this on my podcast about how those things were impactful, obviously, but for me, they're a terrific guide of how not to be. So whenever I have felt that I am going that way, that I have this propensity to get angry and to want to lash out, I think, oh, I'm going into that territory. I need to go the other way. And I'm very reflective of that. I'm very mindful of that because I am the model for my children, right? And I'm a model for other children because I also do, anybody who follows me on Instagram or the Twitter machine knows that I am very involved in my kiddos' lives. And I coach teams and I do things with kids, and I want them to know, the kids that are around me, and young people that are around me, that there is virtue to pausing, to acknowledging that you're angry, but to pause, to reflect and think, is me lashing out physically, is this the best answer at this given point in time? And more often than not, it isn't. I had a situation with one of the players on my team, who, very big guy for his age, and he got emotional during a basketball game, and he lashed out, and I was able to hold him back, and stop him from hitting another boy. And he came to me a day after and apologized and said, "Hey, coach, listen. I'm sorry about that. And are you mad at me?" And I said, "No, it's not that so much that I'm mad at you. I'm concerned about you." He happens to be African American. And I said, "I'm concerned because as you go through life, the fact that you are a minority in this country, the way that we policing is sometimes in this country, that you are not going to get the benefit of the doubt, or you may not have somebody that will stop you. And once you take a certain action, you've started a ball rolling that you may not be able to stop. And I have to worry about that, with you and young men like you, because the consequences of what you do can be dire. And I would never want to see you hurt." And I think that's something, and I talked about this just a few days ago on my podcast, about the fact that we don't teach young men how to de-escalate. That we don't sometimes don't teach men, young men, how to that saving face isn't worth acting out to the point that you hurt yourself and you hurt others. And we really need to have that as a conversation. So to go back to your answer, I mean, to your question, my dad was reactionary. And what I've learned is that there's a lot of virtue in processing, and sometimes to walk away, even if that means you don't get the last word, even if that means that you feel like somebody got the better of you, it's better sometimes to take strategic retreats than to commit to something that's going to really put you in harm's way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, when it comes to anything to do with race, I'll be really honest, that's something I'm very, very hesitant to even mention either on my blog or on Twitter or anything, because I feel that there's massive backlash on my end, even from having an opinion on that. I find that very strongly in the sex positive community as well. It's a subject I just don't even go near, and for me, it's my version of the taboo.
That's actually a very interesting thought. I had not considered that. But I think I understand it to the degree that I married a white woman, and oftentimes I feel that I can get away with certain jokes as a minority. I'm Latino, that I can get away with certain jokes, with certain comments, because I am the minority or have been in the minority. Whereas with her, I mean, when it's she and I, she gets lippy and she's a great person to talk to and a lot of fun, but outside in the world, there's some things that she just could not say, and she's certainly not bigoted, but there are just some things that you have to be careful about
Absolutely.
when you're a white person in this country, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like I feel very comfortable talking about sex and, open relationships and swinging and polyamory and all this amazing stuff on the spectrum, but I tend not to make my opinions known when it comes to, the persons of color debates that go on, or even to the sex end of anything to do with kink or BDSM, because I just don't feel like my voice will add anything, and in fact, it could take away. And that's not a position I would ever want to be in, where I take away from these issues.
Now, do you feel that this is that now, but as you move forward through life and you gain more knowledge, that there might be a time when you eventually might explore it?
I would honestly hope that it will get better, but right now I feel that adding my voice to any of these issues is getting pushback. It's just not very well received, but I'm hopeful because I'm Canadian. We don't face the racism issues that you do in the States. Our racism issues are very different. Ours are against the Native Americans here. That's where our racism lies, and that's just not something that you guys face nearly as much.
No, that 100%. I think that in this country we're equal opportunity fighters. I mean, I think everybody right now is getting dumped on, and I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have in this country, is that in the U.S. is that there's so many people that are being attacked by the powers that be, that one of my biggest concerns about Twitter and Twitter conversations is that everybody has their item, their agenda, or their pet peeve, or the thing that they are passionate about.
Of course, yeah.
And oftentimes, if you feel strongly about that, but that's not your priority, and you just happen to say, well, let me tell you about what my thing is that comes off as an attack. And I've gotten myself into trouble sometimes on the Twitter thing doing that, where whether it's the not all men kind of thing, or whether it's on the Me Too question, or even just recently about the fact that I'm a minority and I was making some comments about, a question about African American and the African American culture. And there were some things that I disagreed. But just from the standpoint of me saying, well, I don't happen to agree with that, this entire concept of, like, well, you'll never understand, you're not black. Well, like, well, I that 100%, that's correct, but black is not one thing, neither is white. There's an entire spectrum
Exactly.
of people, but just the fact that you put your you dip your toe in the water, and you just happen to have a dis, you know what is considered a discouraging word, that comes off as an attack. And I think that as we mature in this electronic adolescence that we're going through, that hopefully the brighter minds will be able to see that Okay. Yes, you have your thing that's important, but there's enough bandwidth in the conversation for me to address, my thing and your thing, and they don't have to be adversary towards one another. Now they can coexist. And until we do that, I oftentimes you just feel like, at least on Twitter, that you're fighting battles that you really shouldn't be fighting just because people are out there to be outraged.
Well, and that's an excellent point, and I'm glad you brought up kind of the Me Too movement and the, can you even understand, because you're not you're not living that. It's something I feel very strongly about, in the context of the Me Too movement is a human issue. It's not male, it's not female, it's a human issue, and everybody deserves to be educated, understand it, ask their questions, and learn so we can, make a better generation upcoming, and fix these social issues that are happening right now. If we silence the male voice from that conversation, not to put too fine a point on it, but that's just going to create bitterness and hostility.
Yeah, I agree. I know, again, and I'll just speak specifically in my case, and I've talked about this on my show, is the concept of, going after your allies. The fact that there are a lot of men out there who realize that there's a lot of bullshit going around, and not only are they recognizing that there's a toxic culture out there, but they're actually doing something about it. For instance, for me, that means teaching both my kids of what's ethical, what's moral, what's consent, so that is a practical approach to addressing the Me Too problem, is teaching the next generation of what is right moving forward. But I've had occasions where, again, mostly online, where I've tried to address, and ask questions, and I always often have to put, do this when I'm typing to somebody, I'm asking the question in earnest, because sometimes when you ask it, people will lash out at you, and because they don't know you, and we talked about this before, and that they're missing the visual cues, the tonal cues that you get from a one-on-one, conversation. So all of a sudden you get a message from somebody on Twitter or wherever, whatever social media is, and you don't have those, and people get defensive right away. But I think that is one of the things that we can think about it and process it, and maybe give people the benefit of the doubt, because a lot of the times I see a lot of Well, I see people online jumping down somebody's throat and attacking an ally. And I know that sometimes when I'm attacked online, doesn't happen a lot, and it doesn't happen to the degree that I'm sure women face see it. But when I do get, or I feel like I'm being attacked online, I tend to think, well, fuck this then. I'm trying to be a good guy here, and you're not seeing eye to eye. Now, I am 40 years old, and I'm matured enough to realize, okay, Hugo, you gotta take a step back. First, it's Twitter. Second of all, there's all these reasons why somebody might feel that way. Why don't you chill out? But that's a man that has been around for quite a while thinking about this stuff. I can't imagine what it's like to be a 20-something, hormonal still, without the strategies that somebody learns over time, getting a message from somebody online and Tim saying, well, I give up because they're all against me. And that's not to justify their behavior. That is just the way that the mind goes sometimes.
Oh, for sure. And I try to have as much open dialogue as I can on, my Twitter. And I always try to, I shouldn't say I always try, but very often I will ask an open-ended question at the end of my blog posts, just to get people thinking about things in a manner like I do. It's open-ended, it's up for discussion. I have changed my opinion so many times. It's a little bit crazy, but you have to create a safe space for people to ask questions. And if somebody crosses the line, affirm, you know, no, you crossed a line and this is why, I think goes further than just poisoning, as you mentioned, an ally.
Yeah. And you have 100%. You're right. I think you need to have that space to ask the questions. And you also have to have the space to be wrong and for that not to be the end of your life, or at least your end of your social media life. And I think that's one of the challenges that we're also having online, is the fact that when you're younger, or when you're not educated, you are going to say some stupid shit.
Mm-hmm.
I know I did back in the day. Every now and then I will still put my foot in my mouth.
I do it all the time.
Right. But you know, the difference, at least when I was growing up, is that I could say something stupid, you know, amongst my friends, and it would stay with amongst my friends. You could actually go to Vegas and things would stay in Vegas. But now, because of the social media and because of every single phone has a camera, and because everybody is looking to get the next TMZ style shot, we want to share so much. But your mistakes that once were private are now global if they get viral enough. And you could destroy somebody very quickly, you know, just by simply pointing out that they were wrong ones. And again, my take on it is, whenever I see some kind of outrage going on, at least now, because I didn't used to always do this, but when I see outrage outpouring onto somebody, at first I think, I'm not going to comment because I don't have all the facts.
Yeah.
Second of all, I got to give time for this person to realize that they were wrong and give them the opportunity to apologize and to try to make things right. Now, if the person continues to do the behavior, or the person double downs, well, then fuck you. You're obviously choosing to be in the wrong.
Or this word that is popping up, and I shouldn't say new, I use that in quotation marks that you can't see, but you know, the internet sensation of trolling, you know, just basically poking the bear. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that I deal with, determining, are they worth talking to if they're doubling down, or are they just a troll looking to people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that you see it a heck of a lot more than I do, and but I'm glad that you're at least going, that you have a process to yourself of how you determine how much latitude you're going to give somebody. Mm-hmm. And I think people need to have a real conversation about what's latitude. I will tell you that for me, I rarely go back and forth with somebody that doesn't have a profile photo of some kind.
Yeah.
I put my face and likeness to everything that I do because I'm comfortable. And also what I talk about, I don't think is ever really controversial. But I put my likeness on everything because, A, I'm gorgeous. Two, you know, I stand by what I say. And that doesn't mean that everybody has to do that. You know, but at least for me, that's something that I feel comfortable putting it out there. But when I see somebody that doesn't, I have to think about, who am I really engaging with here?
Yeah.
And if they don't have a profile photo, then I don't know that it's worth it to me. Mm-hmm. Second of all, if I've realized that I don't have to have the last word. Sometimes online we get into these petty things of, well, I got to say the last thing on it, or I got to make the last point on something. And I have, over the last couple of years, because this isn't something that's a long time coming for me, but within the last couple of years, I felt that I've said what I've had to say. You could keep going if I let you, but obviously there's no meeting of the minds here. So if you want to have the last word, that is not going to hurt my ego. And so I let things go. And it's very freeing. And then finally, it's on my profile thing, I don't engage trolls. And if I've come to determine that you are, adios. I don't need you. There's a lot of quality people online. I think that's, we talk a lot often about the negatives of the online world, but there's a lot of positives. For me, you're one of them. I came upon your talent in your writing because of online. That's a wonderful thing, you know, even though you're Canadian.
Even though I'm Canadian. Come on, that is not a bad thing. Oh.
Yeah. No, I'd move up there. I'd love to visit.
And I don't write "I'm sorry" in my tweets very often, you know. I'm
that's right. I haven't heard a lot of the effects there, but it would be cute if you did. I would enjoy that.
There's been a few "sorry not sorry" hashtags, but that's kind of a Canadian joke.
That's right. So you've been writing for what, 15 years, I think you said?
Just about 10. I'm coming up
upon. Oh, 10 years.
Yeah.
Was it something that you've always done, or was it something where, oh, I have a message and I need to write to be able to convey it?
So I've always written, but my blog came about because I had a message to convey. I had been in an open relationship and the relationship was ending, and I was just trying to grasp at anything I could to see if being in an open relationship was something that I was going to pursue in the future. I had all these feelings, emotions. I was heartbroken. And so I decided to just start writing out my thoughts. And that's how it started. Just me questioning things.
Have you ever seen Insecure?
No.
Okay. It's an HBO. And the reason why I bring that up, because you touched upon something. Currently, at least in the second season that my wife and I were watching last night, they have a character or a set of characters that are in an open relationship. And you may watch it one day. It's an interesting show. It's a show that I would recommend. But in this thread on the show, they are discussing how one person learns about open relationships, enters into a relationship, and then has this entire set of emotions as they see, you know, they have the entire set of emotions of being in one, and I think breaking up in one. I don't know. We didn't finish the episode. We fell asleep. But anyways, I guess the question that I had for you is, do you ever see that kind of relationship in media, in television? And if you do, first and foremost, is it ever being portrayed? And second of all, if it's being portrayed, is it fair?
You know what? I'm actually a terrible person to ask for this because I don't watch a lot of TV. I have Netflix, but I will binge watch a show. I really am into superhero movies and stuff like that. So my frame of reference is kind of like the Star Trek and nerdy sci-fi. And from that exposure, they do things very well. Like The Next Generation does it incredibly well. Star Trek Discovery, another solid way of, you know, bringing different relationship styles to light and questioning them. So that's kind of where I have seen kind of a bit of media influence and done very well. That being said, there was a show a couple of years ago, Big Love, that explored polygamy. Mm-hmm. And that one I found fascinating and just absolutely inhaled it because they were dealing with things like jealousy and all these different things that, you know, when I started blogging, blogs weren't popular. There weren't podcasts. There wasn't any resource for me. So I was basically just throwing my thoughts and feelings into the void because I couldn't ask anybody. I couldn't talk about it. There was no media influence. So I believe it's starting, but I guess to answer your point, I don't think so. I'm not aware of anything, any source that has done it justice. At least there's no big movie or TV show that I hear everybody raving about that I just have to watch.
Good for you. Because there is a lot of TV out there, and everybody has their own recommendations. I will say that that's one of the things when this Game of Thrones things was going on, where I had to mute so much because it was just incessant. So,
I was like, I'm not dealing with this.
right. Okay. So then I had another question for you, because I think we said you're a few years my junior, but one of the reasons, and again, I talked about this on my podcast about jealousy and how I cope with jealousy, because I was a very hormonal, very intense 20-year-old. And although my wife and girlfriend, then wife now, never gave me a reason to doubt her, my lizard brain was just bananas in my mid-20s and fraught with jealousy. It was one of the reasons why we broke up is the fact that it was hard for me to handle that emotion, and whatnot. So as young as folks like you and others who are now talking about the different ways to that relationships can exist or have existed, because I don't think polyamory is something that's new. It's been around for a long time. It's just how accepting we are. But as younger people are becoming aware that love can be in love, attraction, affection, a couple, in a unit can be more than just two. Would you recommend it for somebody, or could somebody that's younger cope with the emotional components that come from a relationship, or is that something but that's best handled by somebody who's more mature?
Okay, I love this question. I do because it's something that I have been very opinionated about in past. I can speak for myself. I wouldn't have had the emotional maturity when I was 15, 16, like right up until probably my mid-20s, to have possibly handled any facet of open. I was going through jealousy, I was exploring, and I use the word exploring probably inappropriately, but I was dabbling with the idea of what cheating was, where my boundaries were, where my limits were, what was the difference between flirting and cheating. And, I was exploring, and I was in a monogamous relationship for just about 9 years. With a person who was incredibly jealous, so I was really one of those people who just like pushed the boundary. So I know for myself I couldn't, and that's based on how I was raised, how my family was. I was in Catholic school. Like, there was just no place that could have entered my consciousness and I could have been successful. That being said, I believe there are lots of people in my age group who are the same. Now, do I feel it's going to be the same way in 20 years? No. I think with, this sex positive community talking more openly about sex, making it less taboo, I think there's an opportunity for people to explore, maybe a triad, in their late teens, polyamory in their early 20s. Like, I feel there's more potential for that. But currently, I think it would be really, really difficult to have something successful that you walked away thinking, oh my gosh, that was an amazing experience to have. And I equate that to, my first love was not a very positive experience. I was young and didn't have a lot of communication skills, and we were not good for each other. We didn't build each other up. And I hesitate to say having more people that in a relationship that could be potentially damaged and impacted by poor communication skills and hormones and all of that would not be something that I'm a proponent of. And to that end, I have never had a problem with my blog being 18 plus. I don't feel a 14-year-old has the emotional capacity with everything fighting against it at this moment to handle something so complex, but I don't believe that'll be the same forever.
Yeah, I mean, our society is changing. Certainly a conversation like this, I don't know where I would have found it in 1995 when I was graduating high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that my children will have access to, because the internet is the internet, is all of these conversations that their father had. And that's something that still boggles the mind. My mind is, and that's why I'm so careful about what I post,
mm-hmm.
because I realize that I am leaving behind, you know, should I go tomorrow? But I mean, but if I did tomorrow, my children would have an entire encyclopedia of writings, of thoughts that I've recorded, of posts that I put on all social media, that they would give them a relatively good picture of who their father was, or at least what he felt strongly about.
Yeah.
And to go back to what we were talking a second earlier, is that the kids nowadays, just by virtue of having access to technology, have an entire library of information to seek out. And yes, they may find answers to questions, and, you know, and explore from there, and that changes society. But I think human nature is still such that those teenage years, there's so much going on, you know, just as far as body chemistry and socialization, that it would be very tough for somebody to cope with the pressures of relationships. Because even just boy-girl for, you know, being, you know, classical, even that is fraught with challenges. I can't tell you how devastated I was the first time that I was cheated on. But I and also the heights of emotion and euphoria the first time I knew that I fell in love with someone. I mean, those were extreme emotions to the point of almost, I mean, because I feel everything. I mean, I'm sure that I must have been a crazy person back then.
Well, absolutely. And I've read a couple of studies focused on BDSM specifically, saying that our brains are not fully developed yet to handle the capacity of a dom-sub relationship. It's not until you're about 25 plus that our brains are structured enough that it's not going to do long-term damage if somebody, you know, mistreats you, or, you know, we're just too malleable at that point. And it can be like long-term irreparable damage, something that, you know, counseling won't fix necessarily. And so going on the actual biology and physiology, not to, you know, change my opinion, but my gut is it's difficult. It's just too difficult to do at an early age. But asking questions and becoming more educated and making more conscious decisions about what you want, I think that'll start happening younger and younger.
And what to me, what that tells me, or at least, what that tells me and what makes me hopeful is that I've always been afraid. This is where I don't think I'm a misfit. It's just the way that I live life. But there's an entire spectrum of experiences to live.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest worry in life has always been that I limit myself to pre-prescribed ideas of how to go about life.
Yeah.
And so knowing that a young person today, by virtue of the information that's out there, that they could possibly explore this and this rainbow of things available to the human spirit, to the human body, I think that's terrific. And that's why when I talk to my children, I always tell them to be mindful of the fact that don't get so settled on things, because you don't know what's around the bend.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of life out there to live. And yeah. So, but I did have another question for you. So, from my understanding, there's no children. I don't know if you have plans to have children, but let's say that you did one day, or let's say that you knew of a couple who was in a polyamorous relationship who had children. How do you start thinking about this is what's normal, this is what's comfortable, this is fair to me and to the way that I want to be, but culturally and legally there's ways that the culture has said there, this is the path. How do you reconcile what's right for you versus the legal behemoth that is culture? Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. On that end, children have an astounding capacity to love and to accept things as are and not even question them. It's just natural. So my hope is that when I do decide to start having children, there will be another long-term couple in my life and maybe more than that. And it'll just be so normal that it won't even make a big deal. There's very few parents who I think are open with their children that they have sex on a regular basis. Like, children just don't want to know about their parents having sex. So having a close friend, open, loving relationships, I just see a child not having an issue with that because it's only an issue if the parents make it an issue. To the legalities end, I think that is just a natural evolution. If the kids don't think it's a big deal, they're not going to make a big deal out of it at school, and it's just not going to be a thing that needs to even be talked about. I mean, I went through, I was in a Catholic school, and I was the only person whose parents had been divorced. And so there was a huge, huge taboo that I was being raised by a single mom, that, you know, I was somehow different, you know, daughter-daddy days just weren't something that I could participate in. And I would actually stay home from school during those days because I was so embarrassed that I didn't have a male role model in my life. And, you know, but part of that was I learned not to talk about my mom being divorced at school. I just didn't bring it up because of backlash. And I feel that children would be the same, you know, if they ever got backlash, they just wouldn't talk about it. They wouldn't bring it up. They'd move on to something different. I mean, at least that's my preconceived notion of how it is. And watching parents, because I do know quite a few parents who are polyamorous or swingers, and they have children. One group of parents in particular, their kids just don't know. They've kept it very secret, and they basically came to terms with the fact that if they ever found out, the kids would be like, ew, gross, and it would be a non-issue because they've been so open in their dialogue about other things. You know, kids just don't want to know what their parents are doing in the bedroom, whether it be one person, whether it be multiple people. They just don't want to know that.
That's interesting. I will say that as, you know, as open as we are here at Casa Torres, the kids will still, especially since I have teenagers now, they're like, ah, you guys go do your thing. We don't care to know. So I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you on that. You know, more than anything, I've been involved with schooling and PTAs and stuff like that. And I know that there's a judgmental crowd out there.
Oh,
it doesn't have just to be polyamory. It could be anything. Yeah. People talk. And so it's just one of those, just one more thing that people need to do that you would have to navigate through.
Absolutely. And it's like anything. If you make it a big deal, it's going to be a big deal. You know, we're creatures that love to gossip and talk behind others' backs. And, you know, we love that the scandal is exciting to us. And you're never going to change that. So, you know, remove the scandal, remove the taboo, just talk about it openly. And, you know, for me, I find that goes a lot farther. When I started blogging, for example, I thought that it was this big, huge, like, scandalous thing. I didn't want to talk to people about it. And it ended up being a self-fulfilling prophecy. where, it became the taboo. I became the elephant in the room because I did it to myself. I made it so. So once I switched my perspective and just said, you know what? I'm putting this out there. This is who I am. Take it or leave it. When we go out, we do not have to talk about this. I'm just a normal person as you are, whatever the heck normal means. Obviously, I'm not a normal person, but
This is, it's quite evident from this conversation.
and I just took the elephant out of the room and I haven't had issues since. You know, to that degree, I took that taboo away from it, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I hear that. Now, have so your family, your close family, they're aware of your blog and they're aware of what you post.
The ones that want to be aware of it are aware of it. The ones that, just like I don't want to do know what my parents or grandparents did in the bedroom, they're the same.
Okay.
They're happy that I'm writing, but they don't want to know about the subject matter.
Well, and that's something that boggles my mind. And again, what I post on Twitter or on Instagram, it's relatively benign. I mean, it's real to me and it's through my lens, but from the standpoint of what can be shared online, it's pretty tame stuff. And I was watching this documentary. There's three parts to it. The first one is actually my favorite one, but it's called Life After Porn. It's on Netflix, I think. And it's these different actors, actresses, performers who talk about their life and what the porn industry was like for them, positive or negative, and where they are at now. But they talk about raising kids and whatnot. And what boggles my mind is, one day potentially, your kiddo could look up, online and see your mom's performance. And that's bananas to me, because that's an interesting line.
I don't think my kids, my unrealized kids would ever have an issue with it. They just wouldn't look. What I'm going to have to teach them, because I do have nudes online, I'm going to have to teach them how to react when their friends find it.
That's a good point.
Certain age, that's where it's like, okay, you know what? Yeah, it's take a page out of my book. If you don't make a big deal out of it, they won't make a big deal out of it, and that's how I decided I was going to approach that. Because before I put my nudes online for the first time, I had that conversation with my partner. I had to say, like, look, if I do this and we have kids, now what? Like, what am I going to do? And we had a long conversation, and ultimately, I just decided, nope, I'm doing this because I'm at the age where I'm proud of how I look. I'm comfortable with who I am, and I'm not doing anything that I feel bad about. So to me, there was no shame in it. And that's kind of how I live my life. And I hope that, that extends to my children.
Now, and that's very fair. And like I said, I applaud it, because it's you've it's very challenging, I think, to truly put your honest self online. We all do some form of self-censorship, but to be honest to yourself and to be honest in a world stage, which is what the internet is to me, that's not an easy thing to do. And so for you to take that leap, I think well, it's a very cool thing to do. Now, on the flip side, let's say your daughter or son turns 18, 19, and they say, "Mom and Dad, my mom, I like to follow suit." What advice would you have?
Oh man, I could write a book on the advice that I gave at that point. Oh my
Well,
goodness.
then, well, don't give it all away, because you still got to get your residuals. But I mean, at least two or three things of advice.
You know what? Maybe I will do a follow-up. I will think about that and I will
Cool.
post on that and we'll actually touch on that.
All right, pretty. I like that. Like I said, we got to get you paid. So not a worry.
No, my can actually make money. I do it because I love it. It's a passion project, but it's been a pleasure chatting with you, an absolute pleasure. Why don't you give a shout out how people can reach you or follow you, because you do have a podcast as well, and you're quite active on Twitter.
Right. Well, as far as where you can find me on the podcast, you can pretty much find me on Spotify, Apple Music, and all that good stuff. It's called Hugo's Post, and basically what it is, it's an extension of my writing. So oftentimes when I write about something or a little vignette about my life, people in the past have always asked me, "Can you tell me more about that, or what are the references, or how did you come up with that?" And so I tend to expand. That's how the podcast was created. And so I take little vignettes, I take little things that have happened, and then I extrapolate from that. So it's Hugo's Post on there. As far as Twitter, again, it's Hugo's Post, and a lot of what I talk about there is just the things that irk me, but also the things that I found exciting and interesting. I even follow some people from Canada, in spite of themselves, and. And then finally on Instagram, I'm at Hugo Torres, Torres. And there you'll find really just my world through my lens, and a lot of cooking stuff, because I'm always cooking and I'm always posting about that there. So easy peasy, that's how you can find me. And I'm very thankful that you had the time this morning to chat with me.
Oh, thank you so much for the chat, and I'm glad we are able to redo this. I am sure we will chat again in the future. Okay.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for listening to episode 2 of Breaking Away with my special guest Hugo, which I hope you will follow on Twitter, check out his podcast, and support him on social media, as he has been a amazing, amazing proponent of the sex positive community, and I'm very grateful to have been able to chat with him. If you like this podcast, please consider liking, sharing, or even subscribing wherever your favorite podcasts are hosted. And as always, you can subscribe to my Patreon account and support this podcast. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for being part of the sex positive community, chatting about breaking away.